Yes, a little bit of Coldplay. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more of that coming 2 weeks from today for game day. If you have not been a part of that, maybe you're new to church, new to Crosspoint, man, day you're not going to want to miss. And believe it or not, that song does really have a lot to do with what we're going to talk about today. If it's your first time with us here during the series, A Bright Future, welcome. My name's Kurt. It's great to have you here. Great to meet you this morning. And kind of the major statement, macro level statement for this series is your vision for 2016 will determine your direction for 2016. And we've been looking at what it means to have a vision, some of the things that get in the way of us, you know, encountering or experiencing that vision or that new reality. And this idea that, man, if we have positive expectations, those things are actually going to drive where we go in this new year. So one of the things I want to share with you this morning that I shared last week and I'm really, really excited about is one of the things we know is that sustainable change requires strong foundations. And here at Crosspoint, we're in it for the long haul. In fact, we're constantly looking at where God is calling us next, what God is wanting us to do. And we're not only building, you know, firm foundations and building wisely right here and in our own neighborhood and in our backyard, but we're also, you know, building and touching lives on the other side of the world. And beginning February 14th, we're going to begin a capital initiative called the Game Change Campaign. And this is going to be one part infrastructure and one part spiritual journey. And it's going to be hundreds of us as we go through these 6 weeks of this Game Change Campaign series, exploring how God may want to use us, giving above and beyond what we normally give to this long-term vision. And as we do that, seeing God work in and through us to continue to touch the lives of people all around us. And so, really excited about it. In fact, we had our leadership launch for this past Wednesday evening. All of our leaders here at Crosspoint came together and we just kind of cast some vision and talked some logistics. And then we just spent some time in this room in a very intimate worship encounter that was just very, very moving. In fact, people are still talking about it today among our leadership. And man, I just think great things are in store. Very excited about what's coming in the next few years. So, but today I want to talk about possibilities. I want to talk about how do we get out of the norm where we are and begin to experience the possibilities that lie out in front of us. So let me pray for us before we go after that today. God, thank you for every single person that is here today. I pray that you be with the words that I've prepared today and that they would be honoring to you, but also, God, that they would be helpful to people who have gathered in this room, to people who are listening on the podcast. God, we're all seekers in one way, shape, or form. Regardless of our spiritual orientation, we're all seeking something. We're seeking an understanding, an experience. And God, I just pray that we would walk out of here today seeing that, man, the future is bright and there are actually new places that we can go. And God, I just pray that you would help me to be clear and to honor you with everything we do today. God, thank you for this time, and I pray these things according to your identity and your character. Amen. Well, you know, there's a number of themes that run throughout the Bible, but one theme that runs throughout the Bible is this idea that we can actually experience things beyond what we're experiencing right now. And so we're going to look today at a story about a guy by the name of Daniel. And Daniel is found in the Old Testament portion of the Bible. This is before Jesus came on the scene. And many of us don't know the story of Daniel, but Daniel is actually baked into American culture. All right, he's baked into American culture because we name our kids, some of us in this room are named Daniel. All right, because this is a guy who lived over a millennia ago, and yet he's still influencing us yet here today. Now, not everybody back then, you know, there are a whole bunch of names. There's like King Nebuchadnezzar. Nobody's naming their kids, you know, Nebuchadnezzar. But Daniel had a huge impact, and people say, hey, I want to name my kid this for various reasons, but one of those reasons is because Daniel means beyond the possible. You know, another way that Daniel is baked into our culture is maybe you've heard the phrase, the handwriting on the wall. I can read the handwriting on the wall. That actually is a reference to the story of Daniel. And so that's something that we refer to all the time that actually comes from this story because Daniel had a huge, huge impact back in his day and is still reverberating here, you know, a couple millennia later. So, you know, if we want to do the impossible, if we want to get beyond the norm of what we experience right now, it requires three things. So number one, we need to know the true God. We need to know the true God. We need to know the truth about God. Now, Daniel is a Jew. And Jews at this particular time in the world are overrun by a particular dominant force in the world known as Babylonia, the Babylonians. And they're dominating the culture. They're taking different little kingdoms and tribes, and they're incorporating them into the Babylonian culture. And this is what the Babylonians do, and they're very, very smart at what they do. And so one of the things they say is, hey, when we go take a new culture, we're going to ask them, who are the best and who are the brightest? So when the Jews come under the reign of the Babylonians, they say, hey, who are your best? Who are your brightest up-and-coming leaders? And they take those leaders and they put them in the Babylonian executive training program. So Daniel, the guy we're going to look at today, he is one of those leaders, and he's kind of incorporated into the Babylonian training program, and he's kind of put in the spiritual branch of the program. And this is a branch that's studying the stars. They're kind of, you know, a part of the occult. They're into astrology and trying to make reality out of the stars and planets. And what does this say about our future? And this particular group is called the Chaldeans. Now, the king of, at this particular time is King Nebuchadnezzar. And he has this very, very troubling dream. And he says, you know, I need to find out what this dream means. So he knows there was something different about this dream, and it means something. So he goes and calls the Chaldeans, this group of spiritual astrologers and magicians and enchanters. And he says, I want you to interpret my dream for me, except I want you to first tell me what the dream is, and then go ahead and interpret it. Now, the Chaldeans, who are supposedly versed in this, they hear this, and they're like, wow, we've never heard of a king ask this before. In fact, here's how it goes down in Daniel 2. It says, the Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. I love what Nebuchadnezzar's doing right here. He actually calls the bluff of the Chaldeans. He's like, hey, if you guys are really spiritual, I tell you what, if you're so spiritual, I tell you what I want you to do. I want you to not only interpret my dream, but you tell me what dream I had. And so he's kind of calling their bluff. This is awesome. And I think this is cool because there's so much spirituality going on in our world today, in our country, that kind of needs to be called on the carpet. The bluff needs to be called on it. You know, we're like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's the way things are. Well, why do you believe that this is the path to all things, or to things that will bring health and prosperity? Well, I don't know, I just feel that way. You know, King Nebuchadnezzar, in fact, this is one of the reasons I love Jesus. You know, for like the last 25, 30 years, I've devoted my life to studying scriptures, to understanding God and how he's worked in the world, and spent a significant amount of time understanding Jesus, the resurrection. I mean, when you look at those events, it's not just like, well, I think he, you know, was resurrected. I think he came back to life. I think the stories, no, there's actually verifiable evidence in the scriptures that you know, for instance, women finding Jesus at the tomb. Why would women in a culture where their word doesn't hold up in the court of law, why would the Bible record them being the ones to find that the tomb is empty after Jesus raised from the dead? It's because it happened that way. That's the only reason. There's no other reason. It's actually, if you wanted to make a believable story, you wouldn't make it that way. See, there's very verifiable things in the life of Jesus. Now, King Nebuchadnezzar, he's like, hey, tell me the dream. Your spiritual advisors, like you say, are, tell me the dream. And the Chaldeans are like, nobody can do that. Dude, you're asking us to do the impossible. And you know what he says? He says, all right, I'm done with you guys. I'm going to eliminate all of you. Now Daniel, he's in the executive training program. He hears this and he says, whoa, you know, maybe I ought to step up right here. Maybe I ought to say something. So he steps up, and here's what happens. It says, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king, .. Now, this next part's very important. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night, and Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So we see here, Daniel is connected to the truth of God. One of the things that makes him so unique is he believes every good thing that comes from God. Now, don't miss the order of events right here. They're very, very important. All right, he goes to the king's admin assistant, says, hey, I need an appointment with the king. She's like, hey, Tuesday? Great, Tuesday it is. I'll be there Tuesday. What time? 9:00. I'll be there at 9:00. He shows up, and he's going to tell the king what the dream is. But guess what? He doesn't know. He doesn't know the interpretation at that particular point, but he has the faith to say, I trust my God and that he's going to tell me. Right? So he has enough faith to say, I don't exactly know, but God, I'm going to trust you're going to show me. And he does what the Chaldeans say is impossible. They say, there's no way that can happen. He commits to tell what the dream is, and he does it. This is kind of a crazy, crazy story, right? Story of Daniel, and I don't have time to go into all the depths and nuances of the story this morning. I want to keep us at kind of a 30,000-foot level because I want us to see how his life operated and the principles that you and I can gain from it. And what I really want us to see is that Daniel is connected to a power source, right? Daniel is connected to a person. He's not just out there freewheeling. He actually, you know, the reason he's so captivating, the reason he's so aligned and people are drawn to him is because he's connected to a person who has capacities to awe people, which is God. I ran across this interesting article, actually a blog a few weeks ago, and it comes from a professor at Arizona State University. She's a professor of psychology, and she talks about why we experience awe, why we're drawn to awe. And her name's Michelle Sciotta, and she studies this stuff, and it's very fascinating. In fact, one of the reasons I think that we're drawn to it is because God has wired us this way. He's wired us to want to experience things and know things we don't yet know and haven't yet experienced. But let me have her speak for herself. Here's her blog entry. It's a bit lengthy, but I think it's worth the while. She says, more than 4.5 million people visited the Grand Canyon Park in 2013. More than 3.5 million visited Yosemite. That same year, worldwide revenues for Cirque du Soleil, the Kibahabahaha, and the theatrical venture emphasizing extreme feats of aerobatics and agility were close to 850 million. Firework displays, first developed in 7th century China, are now featured in celebrations throughout the world at tremendous public expense. The Hubble telescope, which provides our most vivid images of outer space, initially cost $1.5 billion to launch, and accumulated costs of the project have been estimated at over $10 billion. A behavior scientist looks at these numbers and asks, why? Why do people spend huge amounts of time and effort and money on these apparently pointless activities? An economist might conclude that they are all an appalling waste of resources. Why are fireworks, circuses, and images of distant space experienced as so moving and meaningful when they offer neither material or social reward? As a psychologist who studies human emotion, I approach the problem by asking how these stimuli make us feel, what they have in common, and what they might tell us about human nature. Panoramic views, brilliant colors in the sky, remarkable human accomplishments, great works of architecture, art, and music, they all have the power to evoke feelings of awe. Despite their differences, each of these things defies the scope of our day-to-day experience, challenging our comprehension and even our sense of reality. In contemplating them, we may feel small and insignificant, and yet connected with the world around us, in touch with something greater than ourselves. Time seems to expand as we are immersed in the present moment, detached from our normal, mundane concerns. Now, I don't know all of her belief structures, but let me tell you the rest of the story right here. We're drawn to things that give us awe because we're drawn to God. We want more of the things that we don't fully have or understand. I mean, we're wired to want fireworks. We're wired to want to know what's going on in space. We're wired, you know, to want to see beautiful, you know, panoramic landscapes. We're wired for these things because we want to experience something beyond us. We want to experience our Creator. And He's not a force, even though the Bible says He's forceful. He's not a light, even though He exudes light. He's knowable. He's a person.
I am the might before the sword, the tremors in the spear shaft. I craft my ways from blazes of firestorms, absorb the failings of deadened ends to render the floors I dance upon. I am the spaces between applause, the roars of hearts running through heaven's halls. I breathe the forms of light and silence, still the course of cosmic riots. I am the glory of the giants Manasu, Sagamatha, watchmen of the Asian plains. They yield my name, made famous through the cries of albatross flocks, inflamed in Pacific fires. I am dressed in the spray of Nevada dunes, clothed in the shadows of Sahara caves. I am the light of lunar flames, fleshing the rains of Amazonia. I paint the trains of Antarctic quests, release dominion to desert Panthera. I authorize the remains of Aztec and Inca that bloom through the visions of mountain tribes. I ride the skylines, breathe the signs, ignite the paths of astronomy's eyes. I am the unheard, heard in the storms that burn on my words. I am the yearned for. I am the word. I emerge deciduous from the wetlands of your cries, rise through the moments you wake. I bring the dawns that shake the fevers from your remembrance. I am here. I am imminent. I am he who crosses the plains through which you strayed. Discover the parts extinction seared. I dust away the dried remains of tears. Drain the lakes of your regrets. I wet the wells, till the soil, pulsate the toil, quell the rages. Sew the broken pages with my belief in you. I bring the you have never quite met. I am the desire that keeps your pillow wet. I am the heartbeat you seek when you chase after dreams. In the reachings and sighs, you are looking for me. In the body touching body, it is me you seek. In the groans and the longings, it is me you seek. In the yearning dream, in the need to be seen. In the love me, it is me you seek. In the breath drop wonders, gasping hunger. In the touch of a stranger that makes you feel younger. In the books and the fables, in the this is me labels, in the is this me, is this me. In the hear me, say my name. In the touch me, find me, need me, find me. In the aching pain, in the love, the music, the beats, the taste, in the heat and the need, and the need for embrace. In the color, the gaze, the meaning, the desire, in the flame of the voice and the spirit of the fire. When you cry for more, my name you weep. I am he who waits for you to reach. I reach for you and wait. When you lie half broken and awake, I am the watchman of your sleep. I wait and wait till the shakings cease. I am the truth they call release. When the darkness flares and starts to speak, I sculpt the shades of daybreak. It is me you seek.
Yeah, see, we're wired. We are wired to seek that which we want to know more about, that which we don't quite understand, that which is beyond us. And this is what Daniel's doing. Daniel has this ability. Daniel has this innate ability to seek God. He's seeking God, and he knows how to align his life with the truth. And he does this specifically by incorporating certain activities into his life. And so the second thing we don't only need to know God and know the truth, but we need to have certain disciplines or certain activities that are incorporated into our life. Now, I almost took this word discipline off of here, because, you know, we hear discipline, we're like, oh, I hate discipline. I almost made it like, we need to just have the power of some positive opportunities in our future. I'm like, no, we're just going to call it what it is. It's discipline, right? That's what it is, discipline. What's discipline? Discipline is when I incorporate certain activities into my life, into my schedule, that allows me to do things that I currently cannot do. That's what discipline is. And guess what? If you want to experience a different 2016 than you had of a 2015, if you want to have more accomplishments in 2016, you're going to have to build some disciplines into your life that allow you to experience the possibilities and not just the norm. See, Daniel goes into this executive training program. He begins the program, and the leadership of the program come and they say, hey, Daniel, great news. Man, you're coming in. You're going to get this great food. You're going to get great wine. And you're going to experience everything the king experiences, because you are going to get the king's culture. You're going to be immersed in the king's culture. And you know what Daniel does? He goes, oh, man, oh, geez, I don't know that I want those disciplines. In fact, here's how the story goes. It says, the king assigned them a daily portion of food that the king ate, and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. Verse 8, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. All right, now let's talk about a couple weird things going on in this passage. First of all right? A eunuch. What is a eunuch? Most of us don't know what a eunuch is. A eunuch is a man who's been castrated. All right, today we would call him Ballus. That's what we'd call him. All right, and the strange thing, it's strange, I know, but that's what we're dealing with right here. And see, Daniel's high enough in the leadership structure. He's now working with the top brass of the country of Babylonia that he is interacting with the eunuchs. Now, in ancient times, in this particular time, the higher and higher you would climb in a leadership structure in a kingdom, then if you were a man, which all of them were, because at that particular time, men were the ones who were in leadership positions, you would be castrated. Now, why were you castrated? The reason for this is because people in ancient cultures were comforted by the lineage of their leaders. So if you were the king, people were comforted by you because they're like, oh, not only do I know our king, but I know his dad. And I, you know, and my grandfather talked of his dad. So there was great comfort in the lineage. And so if you were castrated, you had no ability to ever be in a kingship role because you couldn't have a lineage. You couldn't have offspring. All right, so and we see this today, right? We see this with like Queen Mum of England, right? People are like, oh, the Queen, I just saw the Queen. You know, there's great comfort with the Queen. And we're like, man, we don't get that, man. We don't have that in our country. Absolutely, we do. I don't know what it is in America with our fixation with Bushes and Clintons, you know? What is it? We're like, oh, we know them. All right, well, you know, and it's normal to think that, all right? But we're fixated on that. It's really weird to me. So Daniel, he goes to a eunuch. And he basically says, hey, look, I know you're going to give me great food, you're going to give me great wine, and you want to bring the king's culture. He's like, but I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm a Jew. I am very, very kosher. All right, I don't eat what kings eat. Listen, Daniel never had bacon-wrapped shrimp. All right, never had it. It's like double on kosher, right? It's amazing. But he could never have it. He's like, I can't do it. And he basically is saying, I have different disciplines. And then, of course, the wine, you know. I don't know what's up with the wine. It says he rejects the wine. I mean, the king would have top-shelf wine, right? But for whatever reason, Daniel turns down the wine. And what I want us to see here is I want us to understand that if you want a life that is different, you have to pin certain disciplines that will allow you to experience something out of the norm. This is what Daniel does. See, he can't do what everybody else is doing and expect for his life to be different. He can't have a schedule, a calendar like everybody else and expect his life to take on new possibilities. He can't have the same values everybody else has because if he does, he's just going to be like everybody else. And so friends, here's the thing. If you want your life to be different, we have to pin certain disciplines to whatever it is we want to be different in that will allow us to experience the possibilities that currently we cannot experience. In fact, this is one of the reasons I think so many times people get very, very frustrated with God. Very frustrated. We think, man, I'm doing the right things. I mean, I'm thinking good thoughts. And we think, man, if I'm just a nice person, God's going to, you know, stick his sugar finger in my cup of my life, and he's going to swirl it around, and there's just going to be a whole bunch of goodness and sweetness coming out. No, it doesn't work that way, right? There's certain disciplines that we have to incorporate that take us to new places. And if you want your life to look different, we have to apply these. And here's the thing. When God sees us put discipline into our life, it's like he sees that and he goes, oh man, there's a son right there. There's a daughter that I want to give some extra grace to. I want to bring some extra power to their life because they're actually taking steps and showing me that they want this. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 6 says this. The Apostle Paul says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear or timidity, but one of power and of love and of, what's that word right there? Self-discipline. See, so many times we're like, man, I wish I was born with the discipline gene, man. My wife, she was born with the discipline gene. Listen, we try to like explain everything away with genetics, right? There isn't a discipline gene. If there was, I wish I had it too, all right? But there's not, all right? I mean, discipline isn't a gene. It's not genetic. It's just what you choose to do. You say, you know, I'm going to build some things in my life that allow me to experience something I currently am not experiencing. And the closer you get to God, the more we actually have a desire to embrace discipline. in our country today, at least statistically, this is going away, away, away. In fact, you realize in 2015, coming into 2016, only 45% of people made New Year's resolutions. Only 45%. Now, I'm not saying that, oh man, you got to make a New Year's resolution. I mean, you know, those are quickly broken. But you know, you need some particular point in your life. And often that's at, you know, the end of the year when we evaluate the previous year, look forward to the next year, where we say, you know what? Here's what went well in my life. Here's some of the things I'd really like to experience in the next year. Here's some things I'm going to pin into my life that will allow me to experience what I've never experienced before. All right? And because we go as far as our disciplines go, right? And again, when God sees those, he goes, oh man, there's somebody who really wants to go someplace new. I'm going to bring some extra power to them right here. And so Daniel, it's not like he's disciplining himself to greatness, right? He can't do that. There's just certain disciplines he's built into his life, and God sees that, and he brings him extra grace and extra power. In fact, we're 4 weeks into the year already, and at least statistically, 36% of us have already broken our New Year's resolution. All right, we have. And I hope today is an encouraging point for us to say, hey, whatever it was that I said, this is what I need change, and I hope we pick it back up. I hope we continue going with it because there has to be something pinned to our lives and our dreams in order for it to become a reality. For me, one of the things I, you know, said for 2016, I said, man, I want to be a smarter leader. I want to be a better leader. And so for me, you know, one of the things I subscribe to is a leadership book summary club where I have leadership book summaries sent to me, about three of them a month. I pay for it. It's something that I use to kind of just grow myself. And for about the last 2 years, maybe 2.5 years, I've been receiving these. And you know what? Here's the thing. I read about a quarter of them. And I, that thing comes into my inbox, and I waste it, man. I see it, I'm like, oh, I'll read that sometime. I never get to it, and yet I'm paying for it. So I decide, in fact, I heard somebody say, somebody close to me say at the beginning of this year, right around the start of the new year, they said to me, you know, and they weren't saying this to me, all right? It was like an observation. They said, I don't know anybody who's getting smarter, who's getting more knowledge into their life, who isn't a reader. I thought, huh. Man, I get those book summaries all the time. I'm not reading them. I need to read them. Now, you know, I get a little smarter when I go to Cracker Barrel and I like do the, you know, the tea game, you know what I'm talking about? Move the teas around and, you know, jump things. But I don't know that I am because I can never remember how to do it again, right? I get there, I'm like, ah, how'd I do this the last time? You know, there's nothing like good old-fashioned reading to the discipline of reading to bring knowledge. I've pinned that. I said every time. In fact, I'm 100% so far this year. I've received two summaries and I've read them both. I'm growing myself as a leader. I have to pin a discipline to it. You know, maybe you're saying, man, I want to be more effective in my career. What does that look like? I don't know. Maybe it involves getting to work 15 minutes earlier so you can be prepared the moment the workday starts. Maybe it means, you know, having a contact list for all your sales calls developed the night before so you're ready to hit the ground running the next morning. Maybe, you know, if you have direct reports, it means that you have a talk point list prepared before you go into a meeting with every direct report you meet with. I don't know. But it means you're going to develop some discipline that says, I'm going to take my career to a new level and my effectiveness to a new level. You might say, man, I want to get closer to God. All right, well, you're going to have to figure out, when am I going to read the Bible? You know, there's all kinds of reading plans. BibleGateway.com, you know, will give you a verse of the day, all kinds of plans. When am I going to pray? All right, I need to make sure I'm going to church regularly, not because God gets happy when you go to church, but you're around people who are going in the same direction. Just try it. I mean, if you're trying to get closer to God and you're not in the habit of going to church, try it for 4 or 5 weeks in a row and see if it doesn't really boost you and take you somewhere. All I'm saying is we've got to get beyond just wanting something new and pin disciplines to it. Daniel, he actually not just got closer to God because he had disciplines, but he also had to begin to fight things that were negative in his life. And for this particular point, I want to call these lies. All right, so there are people in Daniel's life that are telling him things that actually aren't true. Now, Daniel is a sharp guy. He's an amazing, successful leader. And we know this not just because his name's Daniel, and we're still calling our kids Daniel today, all right, but we know this because in that particular time, there were rulers who were cycling through, and yet he remained in his leadership position. So he was serving different kings, which means the kingdoms were changing hands, and yet he was so valuable to them, he remained in the leadership, in the top brass of the leadership structure. And so here's a new ruler who's writing in Daniel chapter 4, and we hear his perspective right here. Let me read it for you. It says, at last Daniel came in before me, he who was named Belteshazzar, after the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and I told him the dream. So here we have another king, different king, Daniel still serving because he's a developed leader, and this new king's wanting another dream interpreted. He's saying, oh, Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you and that no mystery is too difficult for you, tell me the visions of my dream that I saw and their interpretations. Now, the king is being very, very complimentary to Daniel right here. Right? He's saying, basically, the spirit of the holy gods is in you. I see it in you. And Daniel receives this as a compliment. Here's what's fascinating. He receives this as a compliment, but he knows it's a lie. Because, see, Daniel believes in the one true God, not all the holy gods all over the culture like the Babylonians believed. And so he receives it as a compliment. He's saying, hey, this guy sees I'm a spiritual guy, but I know it's a lie because I don't have multiple gods in me. I have the spirit of the one true God in me. And one of the things that they change in him, one of the lies he has to come against additionally, is his name. Notice his name is changed to Belteshazzar. All right? See, in this executive training program, they say, no, we're going to eliminate your identity when we begin to train you. We're going to reculture you, and you're going to lose your identity. Kind of like we did to the slaves that, you know, our country kidnapped back, you know, from Africa, you know, a couple centuries ago. I mean, one of our darkest moments in our nation's history basically said, hey, we're going to kidnap you, and we're going to take away your identity that your parents gave you, and we're going to give you a new identity so that you're confused. That's what we did. Or we give you a new name. So they start attaching these names that have very controlling behaviors to them. And so Belteshazzar is not Daniel. He's not Daniel. So we have to wage wars, number three, against the lies. Against the lies that begin to come at us. In fact, in Daniel chapter 1, it says this, and the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar. Hananiah he called Shadrach. Mishael, he called Meshach, and Azariah, he called Abednego. Come on, that's fine. I don't care who you are. That's funny right there. You know, and Abednego. Now, you know, if you've been in church, or even if you haven't been in church, you know, you probably know certain catchphrases of church culture, and you've heard the phrase, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and as I heard it as a kid, into bed we go. I'm like, wow, that's a fun church right there. All right, and so Abednego. And so, you know, these are not their names. These are lies. All right, they've taken their identities away, and they've replaced the names their parents gave them with complete lies. And if we peel the veneer back on these names, we realize, man, these things are really, really sinister. These are really derogatory names. And so Daniel, his parents called him Daniel, which means God is our judge. And they say, no, you're not going to be known as Daniel anymore. You're going to be called Belteshazzar, which is, get this, lady protect the king. Go figure that. All right? No, but seriously, look at this. Gender confusion is a strategy of the evil one. Right, this isn't new in our culture today, okay? This is an intentional lie. They tried to work into his life to confuse him in terms of what gender he was. Lady, protect the king. And this is a strategy that's been going on for years and years and years, decades, centuries. Hananiah means God has been gracious. Gosh, man, I tell you what, you want to do something new, you have a name like Hananiah, you're going to be fearless, right? Man, I can try anything. I can go after new possibilities because you know what? If I fail, guess what? God is gracious. He's going to be gracious with me and give me another shot. They said, no, that's not your name anymore. We're going to name you Shadrach, which means I am fearful of God. And I think this is one of the reasons that so many religious people never try anything new because they're afraid, oh, man, I'm fearful. God's just going to smite me. He's just going to smite me. Mishael means, this is an interesting one, who is what God is. That's a great name, right? Who is you? I am who is what God is. That's who I is. I am who is what God is. That's who I is. How about that name when you go to school for the first day, right? His new name, here's the name they gave him, Meshach. Meshach, which means I am despised, contemptible, and humiliated. So here's the thing. If you have failure in your life, if you've done something unsavory, if you've done something that you regret and you feel like there's no way, absolutely no way I could ever get out from under this thing. This thing defines me. I'm just a bad person. God must be punishing me. God is coming against me. If you can't appropriately and spiritually get out from under that thing, let me tell you what. You've bought into a lie. Right? You've bought into a lie. You've bought into the lie that there are no new things that could ever happen in your life. There are no new places spiritually that you could ever go in your life. And you've lost the confidence that God loves me and that he has a plan for me, he has a future for me. See, here's the point. Our names, our parents gave us our names, right? I mean, for some, there might be some meaning with a former family member. Maybe your parents just looked it up in a book and said, man, this is awesome. This is the name of the year right here. You know, but for the most part, our names are just what are on our birth certificates. But what is the identity? That's the question. What is the identity I have assumed? Are there beliefs you have about yourself? Are there beliefs you have about God that are not true? That somewhere along the line, you've taken in and you've assumed them as your identity. See, Daniel, he said, hey, Belteshazzar, not my name. That's what they call me, but that's not my identity. And when we see this, we've got to kill those lies. We've got to kill them. Lies like, God doesn't care about my problems. I made my bed. I just got to sleep in it. I got to lay in it now. Why do you think that God doesn't care about your problems? You might say, well, I'm just a failure. I mean, I've messed up way too many times for God to ever work in my life. Why do you think that God could never use you? Man, God has incredible possibilities for you. Well, I'm just like my dad, and he was always negative. I'm just like my mom. She was just promiscuous. That's just the way I am. That's just the way I am. Why do I always think we're like Popeye? I am what I am, you know? Why do we always think, man, nothing's ever going to change? This is the way I am. It's because we've assumed a lie. We say, man, God doesn't care if I go to new places. I just don't get it. We assume lies. When you came in this morning, you received a Sharpie. Why don't you go ahead and take that out? And we're going to do something in our waning moments right here that we haven't done for a while. And I've given you a bunch of examples this morning of things you might believe about yourself that are lies. Maybe there's a few that's come to mind for you already. And so if you're flexible, I want you to pull your foot up, put it on your lap. And if you're not flexible or you want to write better, just take your shoe off and, you know, lay it on your lap. And we're going to write lies on our feet, and we're going to grind them down in 2016, because that's where these lies belong. They belong under our feet. They have no business up in our lives. All right? Now, this is one of our next steps today. You might want to check out some of the other next steps on the back of the connection card, but this is the one I want to walk out this morning. You know, one of the lies I believe, and you know, this is something that happens when I'm away for any period of time. In fact, it happened when I came back from my rest and study break this summer when I was off for an extended period of time, which I will be again this summer. I came back and I just had this sense of fear. I had this idea of like, oh my word, what if I can't hear from God anymore? What if I can't generate content? What if I can't be helpful to people like I have been in the past? Why do I think that? Well, it's because I have this lie that rolls around in my head that tells me I'm not smart enough. I'm not creative enough. And that's a lie. I mean, listen, here we are 9 years later at Crosspoint, and you know, we're still rolling. I'm still building into you. The well has not run dry, so that's a lie. It's a lie, so I'm going to write that. Not smart enough. You can do the same, whatever that lie is for you. Not creative enough. Go ahead and just write yours on the sole of your foot. Because this is where these belong. We need to grind these things out of our life. It needs to be underneath you as we go into the rest of this year. In fact, Daniel 10, verse 11, says this. It says, oh, Daniel, man, greatly loved. So we need to have that operating knowledge right there. But, oh, man, there's a God who loves me. There's a God who created me. There's a God who has a plan for me, regardless of what I've been, what I've experienced, what labels I've picked up along the way. You know, this idea that I'm a failure, God can never use me, this idea that, man, my life, I've made my bed and there's no new possibilities for me, man, those are lies. We need to rest in this idea that God gave to Daniel. Man, you are a man, you are a woman who is greatly loved. You are greatly loved. So let's stand. We're going to stomp out these lies this morning. We're going to grind them down. And you can even begin doing that, man. If you just need to put that thing in the floor, you know, and stomp it in a little bit, you can do that. And we're going to root ourselves in this moment in a song that we've been singing around here. And this is a song that connects us to our identity in Christ. And it's also a song that connects us in our identity of who God created us to be. So let's sing Good, Good Father.